What up, though? What up, though? What up, though? What up, though? Welcome back to Teacher Talk Podcast. It has been 4 years since I have been in a podcast studio. I mean, we know COVID happened. I got married. I had a baby. Life has been lifing. And admittedly, I just really felt like the podcast space was kind of oversaturated and I just didn't have anything to contribute. But shout out to JG from Audio Wave Network. It's a local podcast studio in Detroit, just for kind of just giving me the gentle push that I needed to get back into this space. So without further ado, we're going to jump into episode 8 of Teacher Talk Podcast. Someone has to flip the burgers. I'm joined by two phenomenal Detroit educators. I'm going to allow you guys to introduce yourself. So if you could tell me your name, how long you've been teaching, and one thing about you as a human being, not an educator.
I'm Julie Hughes. I teach at Western International High School, and I have been a teacher for 23 years, seven here in Detroit. And I am married with a 4-year-old daughter.
My name is Christian Young, and I currently teach in Detroit Public Schools Community District's Adult Education Program. I help people get their GEDs. And this is, I want to say year 10 for me. Year 10 for me, certified. Yeah, I'm down a dime. Walk down a dime.
you did your time. We coming up on we're not at veteran status yet. I'm Tori Anderson Lloyd. I teach at the Detroit School of Arts, the only performing arts high school in the city of Detroit. I am coming up on year 11 certified, and I just don't know how much more I could take. But, right, same. I want to talk about, so I was just sharing with Julie and Christian about how I saw the video. And by this time, I'm sure everybody's seen the video circulating of the students at Carmel High School giving a tour of their school. And for me, that video, I'm not going to hold y'all up, that video triggered the hell out of me. And I think one of the reasons why I was so triggered is because it just highlights the inequity in funding and education. Right. And it reminded me of this paper that I wrote for my social cultural foundations class in my master's course that I took at Grand Valley. My second master's, shameless plug, because, you know, DEI is coming for everybody's throats and they're saying, you know, DEI, you got something you didn't earn. I really have two master's degrees and I pay for them as well.
Plus, consider the source, Tori.
Right. It reminds me of this course that I took called Social Cultural Foundations in Education. And I wrote a paper called Someone Has to Flip the Burgers. And I literally did a deep dive into learning about the hidden curriculum that exists in all schools, how schools maintain social class. And so I said that to say the Carmel video just reminded me of how schools keep rich people rich and they keep poor people poor. And so I just want to throw out a couple words or just a couple, you know, ideas before a couple disclaimers. I'm not thinking about this as an elitist, but I am thinking through the lens of a Marxist. I'm taking my critical race theory, you know, theory glasses off, and I'm putting on my Marxism glasses. And I want us to talk about class, how it relates to education, how it relates to the quality and caliber of education we give students. This is by no shape or form an attempt to shame teachers, because guess what? We don't control funding. You know what I mean? And in all honesty, teachers are as much victims of, you know, inequity in funding as anybody else.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But I do want to have this conversation because it's something that, you know, when we talk about achieving gaps, we talk about reading gaps, we talk about it's an opportunity gap due to funding. So without further ado, agree or disagree? And then you guys can say agree, disagree, however you feel, and then we can open up the conversations. Schools teach students to be compliant and obedient.
Absolutely. Agree.
Yes.
Would you care to expand upon that? How so? Have you seen this show up in your space?
Well, the thing is, before teaching adult ed, I did work in the K-12 space. And a lot of times I did see that there was a lot of, let's say, arcane rules. Regulations. For example, I remember one time working in a charter school and I literally had to follow the dean around to see if anyone had their shirts not tucked in and whatnot. I'm like,
a waste of time.
All the while I'm thinking, what does this have to do with true teaching and learning? Mm-hmm. Or trying to penalize someone or give them detention for being out of uniform? And I'm like, well, and the way I think of it, because even then I'm thinking, okay, you think a kid's worried about being out of uniform? And think of some of the lives they may have. Think of some of the lives they may lead and some of the stuff they have to deal with.
Honestly, like, I don't bother with dress code and kids. For me, you came to class, let's go.
Yeah.
You got a belly shirt on? Okay, it's a little belly. Let's go. Your jeans got rips in them? Okay. Let's learn. It has nothing to do. It's respectability, right? We want to teach them, respectability politics early. But, like, why? Why are we teaching them to play this game?
Right. Like, I always tell my kids, like, if I can actually see your breasts, then maybe there's a problem. But holes in your jeans does not affect your ability to teach or your ability to learn or my ability to teach. So we're good. Mm. Neither do, the kind of shoes you're wearing or,
And like, you know what I think is crazy? If you look in West Bloomfield, you look in Troy, you look at the way the students dress out there.
Uh-huh.
Nobody's saying anything if a girl's wearing a belly shirt, but my little black and brown students, it's not acceptable. You're worrying about the wrong things. What are we teaching them? Simply, and that's one of the hidden curriculum, that's a policy that we put in place that this only applies to black and brown kids and black and brown spaces, because out there it doesn't matter.
They peddle the excuse that, they're going to have to dress, professionally to go into the workforce. And it's like, not the way that you're teaching them.
Mm-hmm.
You're teaching them to go out there and push a broom or, so if
what workforce is it?
Yes.
What workforce
exactly.
is it
exactly.
that you are preparing them to go out into that they have to wear? And that's what I spoke about a board meeting, and I was speaking out against the dress code. And I said, the uniform, I said, judges, there's no uniform under that robe. You know what I mean? There's a doctor under his scrubs, like, he's wearing scrubs, but he's not covering up his tattoos. There's no uniform. The only people that I'm thinking about that are wearing uniforms are, and this is where I said I'm going to sound a little bit elitist, but if you're a cashier, you're wearing a uniform. Like, what careers are we preparing our students for where you have to wear a uniform?
Like, if you
don't wear a uniform.
Like, if you're working at a tire shop or a factory or like one of the big three plants, and even then one of the big three plants only in certain departments.
Yeah, because my friends that work in the automotive industry, they wear clothes. So it's, but I have a quote. And I think, Julie, did we get your agree or disagree or your reason why?
Definitely agree. Yeah.
I have a quote. School organization services, wrong quote. Private school students are given the skills needed to become active members of the democratic system, policymakers, doctors, lawyers, judges, etc. However, students who attend public schools are not as prepared to step into roles that require such civic engagement. These students are taught two necessary traits needed to become indoctrinated into the labor force, compliance and obedience. So I asked you all that question, whether you agreed or disagree, because I kind of wanted to just open up the conversation about this idea of just being compliant and being obedient and what career pathways require compliance and obedience.
Well, I also wanted to say a third thing that they teach, filling in a freaking bubble on a test.
That's compliance and obedience.
Yeah.
Yeah. You fill this in.
But the thing is, really, yeah, you have work rules at every job.
True.
But that being said, some of that stuff doesn't even go as far as some schools do. Work rules don't go as far as absolutely school rules not. Do.
Absolutely not.
Like, mainly, work rules basically boil down to some of the stuff, and even this I have in my classroom. I just have four simple rules in my classroom. respect yourselves and each other.
Yep.
Take care of business. Do all the work assigned. I mean, I'm working with adults now, so I know that cell phones, like, they got lives and whatnot. I'm like, all I ask is that keep the cell phones on vibrate, and if you got to take a call, like, because, you know, stuff happens, step outside, and when you're finished, come back in. And number four, keep the room clean. That's it. That simple.
Absolutely. So I got another quote. The hidden curriculum in public inner city schools is essential in sustaining the middle class, working class, and working poor in America. This is evidenced by comparing school policy procedures and environment, which mirrors the workplace, ultimately preparing inner city students with labor for labor instead of leadership in a democratic society. So my question to you is, how does your school mirror the workplace?
Well, in our case, we actually have a direct partnership with Detroit at Work. So the thing is, a lot of our students, we try to set it up where our students, in addition to their GED studies, do get hooked up with a career coach through Detroit at Work. And they are supposed to get career counseling and job placement. They can even take workshops and things of that nature.
But you know what's crazy to me is that education is so focused on career, 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 that we become more, and I get it, you know, we want to produce, and this is what we learned in this class, is that the role of the education system is to produce, you know, citizens to enter a democratic society, right? We want to produce functioning democratic citizens for the U.S. But we become so focused in pumping out these little worker bees that we don't teach, and we don't teach them to think, and we don't teach them to learn. And I think that's my biggest gripe with the education system is that we're teaching them to be obedient. We're teaching them to be compliant. I'm not teaching you how to be creative. I'm not teaching you how to push back against the system. What did Asada Shakur say? She said, only a fool would give you the tools that you need to overthrow them, or only a fool would give you the education that you need to overthrow them. We are not giving them the education they need to think critically. I'm teaching you how to fill in a bubble. I'm teaching you how to pass a test. I'm teaching you how to say yes to your boss. I'm teaching you how to clock in to work on time by making you come to class on time and being upset when you show up late, even though your parent is dropping you off. I'm teaching you all the skills you need to be a good worker bee. And that's what pisses me off about my job so much, is that I know I'm not teaching you how to think. I'm teaching you how to get in line.
No wonder I'm such a terrible teacher. I don't do any of that shit. I don't.
Hypothetically, I'm supposed to teach you how to do this.
And the thing is, I've spent easily the last 10 years of my career just not doing that. But the kids don't get it because they've spent their entire, you know, I've never taught lower than ninth grade, and they've spent, you know, the first 9 years of their education.
The unlearning is so real.
Yeah.
I don't make kids raise their hand and ask to go to the bathroom.
Right.
In my class, they get up, they say, Miss Anderson, I'm going to the bathroom. They sign out for accountability, because we got to do the accountability logs at our school. They sign out and they go to the bathroom.
See, keywords, have to.
Because I was like, I need to know where you're going in case, you know, something happens. I need to know what time, you know, the date and stuff like that. That's something I'm asked to do because I'm being compliant, right?
Right.
And so for them, after all day of raising their hand, they still raise their hand and ask to go. So when they ask, I'd be like, can you? I'm like, it's a human right. You can go. Like, stop telling me. And it's literally a running joke in my class, because whenever somebody forgets, I just stare at them. And the whole class just laughs. They're like, bro, just go. And I'm like, just go to the bathroom. But that thing is just so ingrained within them from day one, from K. Like, from K all the way up to 12. We just work, 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 work. Produce, 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 produce.
Right.
It baffles me. I'm actually intrigued with it because nobody cares about it. Like,
and I'll say that, I mean, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're okay.
But the thing is, like, I feel like now in adulthood, I have a little more leeway. I have a little more leeway because by this time, a lot of them have seen, a lot of times, I'll be real, a lot of times they have said, that contributed to why they left.
Mm-hmm. The traditional, like, K-12 model.
Yeah, it's sure. Like, and the thing is, like, yes, don't get me wrong. Yes, I'm teaching to a test. Yes, I'm teaching to the GED.
Mm-hmm.
So I still, and furthermore, they revamped the GED 10 years ago to be more in line with the Common Core and college and career.
I wish I could see my eyes readiness.
College and career readiness skills. But I still, one thing I did get a chance to do is take a deep dive into the standards of what they really mean. Mm-hmm. And I realized there's so many ways you can teach these standards.
Yeah.
There's so many ways you can skin a cat. There's, who says I
don't
have
come for
to
me,
use,
Peter. Don't come for me. But my grandma for sure used to say it's more than one way to skin a cat. Like, absolutely.
Who says I have to use this text to teach this skill or mm-hmm. this objective or this
your curriculum leader said that.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Yeah, and Pearson. Plus the curriculum leader and people who wants to shell out like thousands of dollars to buy a curriculum that is inflexible, that does not adequately address the needs of our kids, when you could distribute that among teachers in-house in the district to develop it on their own.
Mm.
But I digress. I digress. Let me get back focused. I will say that I do get a chance to delve into some deep topics, because the thing is, the GED test is segmented into measuring these skills,
mm-hmm.
at least on the language arts side.
Okay.
And so we get a chance to read a nice variety of texts, like from news articles to stuff. But here's the thing.
Your social studies are English. Well, what do you teach primarily?
Certified ELA, but I teach both.
That's what I thought too. And what's English? English too. That's what I thought too. We were all English.
Literacy is supreme.
And I honestly want to talk about, so for a lot of people that don't know, Detroit Public Schools recently, there was a lot of, and I don't want to misspeak, there was a settlement because some students sued the district because it was found that, how do I say this? Help me out here, guys. It was found that some students graduated without knowing how to read.
Yeah, let's not euphemize it, Tori.
I'm trying to play it safe here.
I mean, come on.
I don't want no defamation. I don't want Crystal Wilson coming for me. I want to speak correctly. Either way it goes, it was a right to literacy lawsuit, right? A lot of people, I read an interesting statistic. They said at least 50% of people in the city of Detroit are functionally illiterate. A lot of people who know me, they know that literacy is my bag, right? Literacy is attached to, you know, whether you're going to be incarceration rates, welfare rates, health. You know, your life expectancy is shorter, you know, the more, you know, if you're illiterate, you know, it impacts your life expectancy. And so this lawsuit was like a big deal in the city of Detroit.
Right.
And so for me, what does it say? And, you know, I've already shot myself in the foot. Apparently I'm not qualified enough to work downtown, even though I have 2 master's degrees. I've written curriculum for several nonprofit companies. I'm not qualified enough to work downtown. Translation, I'm not compliant enough. So I've already shot myself in the foot, but I'm saying, what does it say about our district that we don't prioritize making sure that students can read at a functioning grade level prior to graduation? Like, what are we saying to our students as a district? Like, what are we saying about what we believe they're going to be capable of doing? What do you guys think about that? Since you brought up literacy, that wasn't even on my plate for today because I wanted to stay away from the lawsuit.
Frankly, you got 3 English teachers in here. It's going
to
come up.
Right, I was about to say, I was like, I can't.
Frankly, I think they're more concerned about their statistics at the district level than the students.
Data.
So there's millions of dollars coming into Detroit for this upcoming school year. And
nearly 100 million,
3
y'all.
Years for literacy. And this is going to surprise a lot of people because people are just shocked when I tell them this. our school district, how many schools we got? Like about 100 something?
100 and...
We got too many fucking schools in the district. We have way too many schools. I don't think we would be better if we just less schools and maybe just had like a couple big schools and put everything into that one pot.
Well, shit, we used to have three times
here's,
as many.
I know, but I'm saying though, here's my ADHD showing up, y'all, because I'm off topic. But
I've advocated, I don't know how seriously, but you know, like if you can't handle the problems that come with this district, then break it up into smaller pieces. Like, you know, have a Southwest district and have an...
Like consortiums.
Yeah.
They did try that before.
No, that's with the EAA. That was
No. I'm talking about like Area A, Area B, Area...
You know when the areas was allowed. Yeah. The areas was hit. Coming from the Area E essay contest winner in 1996 for my essay titled Racism in America. Sorry, I'm just tooting my horn a little bit. But, a little humble brag. I was in the sixth grade, but you know, slight flex. But I say, I'm going back to my initial point, a lot of people are surprised when I say this, but in all the schools in our district, there's no librarians. The last librarian was at DSA. So, and I wrote via email, and I can use this, you know, to elevate it, but if we are worried about literacy, and if literacy is a priority, shouldn't we fucking at least have some libraries in our schools? Like
that part.
How do we say the Carmel video? They library was like insane. Insane library.
Everything was insane.
The fact that they even have a library.
Okay, let me paint a picture for you. This is why
Where's my wine? I'm sorry. It just did something to me. Julie's taking shots of wine. She's responsible.
So
I have a toddler. I am not.
Before I came back to Michigan and got on my job here.
No libraries.
I spent 11 years working in Las Vegas for Clark County School District. Now, Clark County is the fifth largest school district in the country. Okay. We have, like you said, 107 schools. Mm-hmm. And I believe Clark County has like 300.
Damn. Okay.
I think New York is number one in terms of size, and I think either Chicago or LA is second.
That's why that unions is so badass. Okay, got it.
And now the inner city school, they have suburbs too, but the entire county is one big district, and it's massive. Like, you know, if you know Las Vegas, you know it's just one big valley, and everything there is one school district. Mm-hmm. So
no charters.
They have charters too, okay, but not a whole lot. But what they do have is they have magnet schools, which essentially the same as, like, you know, the magnets we have here. What do we call them?
Schools. Yeah.
Application schools.
No. Not. Technically, yeah.
Because I went to a magnet school.
But
it's gone now. But.
Crockett was a magnet.
Barber.
Oh, Barber.
Barber Magnet Middle School.
So did my wife.
Okay, BMS.
No, she didn't go to Barber, but she went to a magnet school, Magnet Middle School.
Fisher, Farwell.
Hallie.
Oh, Hallie. I was about to say Fisher, Farwell, Hallie.
Like, you know that
she's a West Sider.
Offer automotive and...
Okay.
Okay. So they have those. They have they had only a few at one time, and now they're expanding. My second school there was East Tech, and it was... In its second year, it was amazing. It had the school that I, like, they were separated into houses. My house had the medical and education program. So
not like Hogwarts with houses. I'm sorry.
No, kind of is. But I taught ninth grade English. I was the only ninth grade English teacher in the entire house.
Okay.
We worked with partners. So I had the computers teacher that taught ninth grade. Business applications was my partner. So we were all one big cohort. Mm. And then, you know, there were all different cohorts. But it was a public school. It was an application school, but it was a public school. Okay. And like the education school was had a much lower threshold to get into. Okay, it was early education.
Okay.
The medical program, the highest threshold. So I had the highest and lowest kids all in my class.
Okay.
So there was a lot of differentiation. And then there were other programs, marketing, and
that's
when
cool.
students graduated there, they graduated with like a CRN, CRNA.
Mm-hmm.
So they got.
So it's like a vo-tech, like a vocational school, exactly. like Crockett.
Right. But this school was amazing. And I highlighted this one line because when I first started reading the article, entering college or beginning a career requires strong math, reading, science, and other cognitive skills, as well mm-hmm. as the ability to work well and communicate effectively with others, mm-hmm. solve problems creatively, and see tasks to completion. They had what they called their tenets, which were essentially all of the career readiness skills, mm-hmm. career, college, whatever. And those were our guidelines. Those were what we focused on. We did project-based learning.
Love it.
That was, what we should have, that was what we focused on.
Do you all think, not sorry to cut you off, no, do you all think that schools, especially public schools, place emphasis on one or more unfairly? Like, do we emphasize college over career?
I think that we
does
did.
Snoop smoke.
when I mentioned to you when I sent you the message that I had to learn a lot in my 23 years. One of the things that I had to learn was, I was one of those that peddled college.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we don't have any tradespeople now.
Mm-hmm.
And they make so much more than us.
Mm-hmm.
And
let me know how to fix a washer and dryer.
Right. And before I went to East Tech, when I was teaching in a regular, even then it was a magnet school, but I didn't have the magnet kids. When the kids can make $80,000 a year parking cars, but you're telling them to sit in that seat and learn to read and write. They don't need to learn to read and write to park cars. So what's the buy-in? But then when you have a school where you're making learning exciting, giving kids something that they want to do, and like the education kids get to work in the preschool, in the daycare, the medical kids get to either take sports medicine or they get to pursue it's amazing. We had a librarian. Okay. We had a library with books. Now we didn't have sports because they had to go to their home school mm-hmm. to play sports. But so when I was looking at that, like our kids that came from all the regular schools that were just as disadvantaged, well, some of them were rich, but, cause they could come mm-hmm. from wherever, including the suburbs. The biggest difference was parental involvement. They could have kids that were maids at the hotels, but they cared about the kids' achievement and they were at every parent conference.
I was talking to somebody, I reposted the Carmel video, and I think it was Deidre from Black Girls Teach. She reached out and she was like, schools like this, the PTA at these schools is like insane,
mm-hmm.
right? So think about the socioeconomic status of somebody like who can be involved in the PTA full time.
Mm-hmm.
Like think about Detroit right. moms or Detroit dads.
Absolutely.
That work at the plant. You know what I mean? Like I may not be able to make a PTA meeting at 6 p.m. because I'm asleep because I got to work, a 12-hour shift the next day.
Right.
But think right. about the PTAs and like these schools that have these strong PTAs typically, and I don't want to make a generalized or a blanketed statement, but I might be a little right in saying that, these schools that have strong PTAs, they may be in affluent districts.
Yes.
Because the parents may have a little bit more wiggle room. They may have a little bit more flexibility. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, sure. You guys want my dad's firm to donate to the PTA? Let me have my dad's firm cut a check for $5,000. Like, it's nothing.
Or as we stated earlier, if we were talking about inequity within the district, you know what? Let's just go ahead. Since we named where we work, let's just go ahead and name names. A Cas Tech parent. Mm. A Renaissance parent. Mm-hmm. A Mary Grove parent. A DSA parent.
I mean, listen, it didn't take me. I came from Davis Aerospace, the only aviation high school in the Midwest. Look at me gassing up my district. And I didn't realize the inequity that existed in the district until I got to DSA. I was like, I'm walking around like, this is nice. Like I've never been anywhere before, but it's just, sadly, inequity exists within our own district. So really, how are we going to call out anybody about inequity when we doing this shit in our own
grass? We got to keep the same energy all around.
We got to keep the same energy. That was actually, I want to segue into that because we are, we started a little late. We are strapped on time.
One thing that I wanted to add about that school, though, we had fish bowls. You know what those are? Mm-hmm. Could you imagine in like a regular DPS school, go work in the fish bowls. Just come back 5 minutes before the bell. Those fish bowls will last about 5 minutes.
I was about to say the academic integrity that it takes to be able to independently learn in a fish bowl. I would be that's interesting.
But those skills have to be built. But they can be built.
It's different rules. It's different regulations. It's a different standard and expectation, and that sucks. I don't know if I want to ask this question. Since we're talking about inequity and school funding, you guys know that Dr. Vitti sent out a memo to the state asking for, more equitable funding for school districts, specifically high schools. I didn't know that it cost more money to operate a high school than it did other schools. And so my question is, it does make sense.
More students.
It does make sense. More students, different programming.
Yeah.
My question was, how can we abolish? What would abolishing a school funding based on property tax look like? Because we can talk about the issue. So I consider myself, I'm leaning more so away from anti-racism and more into abolition. We can talk about the issue all day, every day. You can tell me the sky is blue, but what are we going to do about it?
That part.
I'm leaning more toward,
the solution?
Exactly. What's the solution? How can we change this? How can we adjust this? How can we demolish it? Because, there's really no adjusting this system. We got to tear this shit apart. What does abolishing the inequity in school funding gaps look like to you all?
To me, it would have to do something. It wouldn't solve the problem by itself, but it would have something to do with taxing the business structures.
Mm. You took the words right out of my mouth.
That operate in the city.
Yeah.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
I never thought about that.
That honestly would be the first thing I think about, because the thing is, they hand out tax breaks all the time to these businesses. Like, say, for example, I just read something about the portion of the taxes that's supposed to go to the libraries in the city is instead being rerouted to something else.
Mm. Okay, that's a solution.
So I'm like, you know what? Like, yes, the taxes should be, the businesses should be the main ones being hit because they're the main ones that generate the most revenue.
So here's my dream. Right. Let's say, and I know people in the suburbs will lose their mind if they heard this. Let's say you pay your property taxes, and instead of your property taxes going to the schools in your district, let's say the property taxes go into one big pot, one big state pot. Right. Now, I'm going to get beat up for saying this.
And let's say you distribute
all the property taxes by need. Which means Unfortunately, the school, not unfortunately for me, but the schools in the urban and the rural, because sometimes we forget rural when we're talking about inequality and inequity.
Because
if I'm being honest, the rural districts probably get hit a little bit harder than the urban districts. Because at least we got the population, right? So you got this big pot of money because everybody's putting all their property taxes into this one pot. And instead of just distributing it, you know, to my district, every district, and I'm not even going to say every district gets the same amount, right? And then what's left over is distributed by need. So it's this issue of equity and equality, right?
So just cutting up the pie and the district that needs it the most gets the biggest piece of the pie.
Absolutely. Basically. Everybody gets the same slice of pie for their students. That's equality, mm-hmm. right? But equity would be, all right, now we've given away these slices of pie. Now we can go into our, because, you know, you get federal funding. Now we can mm-hmm. go into our federal dollars and we can give this district a little bit more because they need a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because if you're in West Bloomfield, if you're in Troy, do you need more? If you got a PTA that's raising hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, we got to pay for our own buses for field trips. That's insane that we have to pay for buses to go on field trips because we don't have our own bus system. But schools like Troy and West Bloomfield, they do. So our students don't even get to experience things like other schools
and, then the district,
and other districts in the state.
And then the district makes it to where, oh, you have to put in a bus request for liability purposes.
Well, I mean, that's just a compliance thing. I'm talking about the money.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the money. But if we're getting back on to, you know, the theme of how this maintains social class, and I can't even expose my students. I can't even take them on a trip to U of M, right? It limits their exposure to certain things by not even being able to take a field trip someplace.
Like, example.
Yeah. It all boils down to money.
Example. Like, they messed around, like I said. I teach both the English and social studies parts of the GED, and they really messed up when they let me do that, because you want to know how much I've been begging to take my students to Lansing, to the legislature.
What's stopping you?
Like, well, trying to get the request from downtown, but they like, but you know how it is, hemming and hawing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't do well with hemming and hawing.
And I think I got time maybe for one last question.
Can I have one thing?
Yeah.
Just, okay, so Las Vegas, much bigger district, much more money, but way more top heavy than we are. And teachers are paid worse benefits, by the way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, top heavy sounds like teachers are going to make less. Yeah.
Right. But they still make money for things like, we don't make our own copies there. They have
A copy person
in every school. You put in your copy order, 3 days later you get your copies. The machines are maintained. Everyone has their materials. The things don't break like every machine in every building constantly does. So that's one more salary per building, but every teacher is not spending hours copying things, breaking machines, wasting materials. And instead, they're spending that time doing actual planning and lessons and grading and all the stuff that they're supposed to be doing instead of sitting at a copier.
Mm.
And probably the money that they save on the machines and the materials and whatnot, they could pay that salary. So it's, you know, the money that they waste in this district is insanity, but I don't think it's done on accident. And that's, I just wanted to get that out.
So I got a quote, and I kind of want to end on this note. Equality of opportunity requires equality of educational opportunities. If I'm thinking about how schools maintain social class, I think about the opportunities that our students are given or not given. I think about what they have versus what they don't have. I think about what we choose to fund versus what we don't choose to fund. And as somebody who's lived in Detroit her entire life, somebody who's gone to Detroit Public Schools and somebody who's now a Detroit Public Schools community district educator, I'm with you. I don't think it's all by accident. I think that they know that what's our biggest industry in Detroit? The biggest industry in Michigan?
Automotive.
The automotive industry. I think they know that somebody has to work the line, right?
Right.
And I guess I just hate the fact that it has to be my kids that have to work the line. And I don't want to get emotional. But, like, what about the little girl who wants to be a marine biologist, but you can't take her on a field trip to see an aquarium? And now the little girl that wants to become a marine biologist has to be, and I'm not trying to sound elitist. I've got plenty of people that work in the plant that are now just now going back to school to pursue their dreams because plant people make good money. And if somebody's waving $20 at you straight out of high school, you're going to take that $20 straight out of high school. They're going to pay you to forget your dream. But I guess I'm wondering what education would look like specifically in our city, in our district, in our community, what education would look like if we gave students the education they needed to just dream and not career readiness or college readiness. What if we just gave them the education and the skills they needed to dream? And I know that sounds, I did a curriculum project last year, and it was all about freedom dreaming, right? Mm-hmm. And just the ability to dream and imagine the possibility of just something different is a revolutionary act in itself. And I just wish that in education we could do that.
Agreed. And one thing, like I said, another thing I like to do is, like, when I'm teaching social studies, it includes civics, right? It includes civics education, but I really dive deep into it. And I even had someone who's close to our age as one of my students even say that she never understood the importance of voting and civic and participation until she got to my class. Mm. And furthermore, and that got me thinking, but while I'm glad that I was able to open her eyes, it also has me thinking, I know she had to take a civics course as part of.
That doesn't mean it stuck with her, though.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can take a class. I can sit and listen to somebody talk all day, every day. That I'm amazing at disassociating. I can literally just
that part
turn my brain right off and just float off into a little cloud. So maybe it didn't stick. Maybe something just didn't mesh with her. Something about what we're doing in education has to change, though. You know what I mean?
Agreed.
So that we can make what they're learning more relevant. And not just something that's a standard or something that's a text that they have or a module. What do they have in the middle schools? The modules?
Yeah.
Not a module that you got to get through. Like, let's just focus on making it relevant. And this is probably why I don't have a job downtown, because I'm just.
Thank you.
I don't play those games.
Yeah. How do you make it relevant?
Yeah.
Beyond relevant. Relatable.
Yeah, for sure.
Relatable. And also, while you were talking about why has it got to be our kids that make those cars?
Mm-hmm. Or because, you know, the paper was flip the burgers, but in this sense, it's not flipping the burgers. Why is it our kids on the line?
Right. And furthermore, I'm also looked up something. And another one of the biggest employees in the state, the MDOC.
Oh, because we got a whole bunch of those in the state of Michigan. Absolutely. Yeah,
the MDOC.
Absolutely. So,
and we could even, that could provide a jump off point for the whole prison to pipeline, school to prison pipeline thing.
Listen, that's a whole nother episode.
Yes.
The school to prison.
In and of itself.
That's a two-part episode.
Yes.
There's a lot to unpack there.
Yes.
But Christian, Julie, I want to thank you both for joining me. This has been a refreshing, I'm just stepping my toe back into the podcasting land. I'm definitely appreciative for both of you just sharing space with me and just being authentic about your experiences and just about, you know, your thoughts. Because a lot of times when teachers are put in front of a microphone or it comes time for teachers to talk, a lot of people don't want to say what's on their mind. And, you know,
because they're scared of someone downtown or their principal, whoever watching it,
which I don't understand. We pay $40 every 2 weeks to say whatever the fuck I want to say. I'm
$40.
Yeah, it's $80 a month. Right? I pay it gladly because I know I'm the teacher that needs a union. Absolutely. I will pay that shit like on time. I need a union. I'm not even going to hold you up.
But I have friends that try to shut me up, and they're usually not very successful. So.
Absolutely. And I just appreciate when I'm able to just discuss things like this.
I'm a whole union rep.
Right. I appreciate when I'm able to discuss things like this with other educators, because it's just, it's refreshing and it's rare, because especially in education, unfortunately, teachers are silenced and there are teachers who don't have a voice. And I think that's why I started this platform. We have drinks because guess what? World, teachers drink. I cuss because guess what? Teachers cuss. It's
CD, fuck off.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Oh, Nikolai. I think we just need to have just a meeting with Dr. VD and just closed session DFT meeting. But that's another story for another day. We're going to be all right. But again, I want to thank you both for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
With that being said, thank you all for joining me for episode 8 of Teacher Talk Podcast. It's been 4 years. But I guess it's safe to say I'm back. We'll find out. Until next time, thank you.